Remember one night, though, I read the meeting schedule wrong, and by miracle or coincidence, however you choose to look at it, I ended up in a meeting. And I knew it was different from the get-go. You know, the people walking in looked like different people I'd used with from time to time. There were the hippies and the heads and the bikers. And they were laughing and smiling and hugging each other. And, you know, I said, this is cool. Religious cult, you know. I really believe that. And then they talked about God and they passed that basket just like church. I can appreciate it, you know. I was like, this is cool. I can appreciate what y'all are doing, a bunch of addicts, you know. But to me, I didn't have a problem with drugs. I knew I had a problem because I kept getting in trouble. But I'd been looking for something else to help me. Ever since I can remember, I felt different, you know, just like most of us. I have two older sisters, and they're both earth people. They don't use. And both my parents are earth people. And I'm the youngest. And ever since I can remember, I was doing things and saying things they could not understand, and nor could I explain. You know? I didn't take a bath. I wouldn't clean. I'd beat up my older sisters, get in fights at school, tell dirty jokes to the preacher, and I did. Ask my mom, she's witness. I don't remember, but she tells me I did that. And they would ask me, why do you do the stuff that you do? You know, why are you acting that way? And I really never had an answer. I felt like it. You know, that was, why else? You know, I felt like it. I don't know. Tell them how, try to explain a little bit, and they would look at me with blank stares and say, like, you need help. Something's wrong with you. And I said, I know. It's like you're getting in trouble. And I could never explain it. I always felt different. I always felt like God had made me wrong. God had made me bad. He made everybody else normal and made me wrong. And kind of like a mistake. And I always had to do other things to feel equal to everybody else, or at least get attention. And that's just the way it worked. But I knew from ever since I was a little kid that something was wrong with me, and I just didn't know what that was. I just felt like I'd been made bad. So I've been trying different things all my life to make me feel better, you know, weird behaviors and acting out, however, and I was one of the fattest little kids in elementary school. My first drug of choice was food, and I remember cutting school, watching Sesame Street, eating jelly sandwiches and Oreo cookies, and I was happening. And that was it. And around 11 years old, I got my first real drug, which was alcohol, and you know, I remember the feeling it gave me. I loved it. It was great. And it's the closest thing I can relate to the third step since I've been in recovery, you know, making that decision to turn my will and my life into a care of a power greater than myself, you know. Because I didn't realize it then, but looking back now, I can see that moment, you know, I wanted everything in my life to feel like this, how I felt when I got drunk. It felt good, man. And I can look back and see how everything changed from that point on, finding ways and means to get more. You know, things that I used to do that didn't revolve around getting high, I changed them for things about getting high. And your disease progressed. But I never felt like drugs was a problem. I liked to do them. Drugs to me was a relief from life. My problem was me, my head. The stuff about me that I couldn't explain. The stuff that I never shared with anybody. My thoughts and my feelings, because I knew it confused everybody and nobody understood. And I was in a lot of pain a lot of the time. And it was just the way it was. It wasn't like one day I woke up and said, God, today I'm hurting more than yesterday. It was like, this is how I always felt. And just as I got older, it got worse. The drugs kind of made it better. Partying, you know, I got an identity. I turned from that fat little square kid, nerd, to learn how to look cool, talk cool, be cool. and get drunk. Yeah, and I liked that. I liked it a lot. But I was looking for something to change me, though, ultimately. We had to get a counselors because I got in trouble. And I tried talking to them. You know, the Grateful Dead and Hare Krishnas and church, you know, all this stuff, trying to find the fix to help. Because I really wanted to change. But it wasn't about drugs. To me, drugs is not a problem. It was just something I did to help me with my problem, you know, which was me. And, I tried the church thing, and I won't even go there. I always care about it, but I want to speed it up a little bit. So by the time I got introduced to NA, you know, I just felt like you guys were a bunch of addicts, and drugs was your problem. And I felt like you were telling me that if I just put down the drugs, everything would be all right. You know, if you just stop using, everything's going to be fine. You're going to be happy. You know, you're going to be saved. And, you know, your problems are going to disappear. And I was like, maybe good for you, you know, but drugs helped me out. My problem was when I was straight, you know. So I was like, good for you. I wish it was just that simple. And I quit it, and I'd be all right. My problem is finding more to make me take me further away from me. And, I came to meetings high, and I came to meetings drunk, and you guys never turned me away. You know? I came just in time for the meeting, though, and left as soon as it was over. I didn't feel comfortable sticking around talking to straight people. I never did, you know? And, I came to meetings high and drunk, and I didn't think you guys knew. You guys never said, what drugs are you on? You know, where are you getting them from? And where do you live? And what's your phone number, you know? And you guys gave me your phone numbers. And not that I ever used them, but, you know, I was used to going to places where, you know, you paid to go, and you had to sign a statement saying that you were going to stay clean, that they'd piss test you every 30 days, you know, and all that stuff. And here you guys say, you know, just come when you want, leave when you want, it don't matter, just keep coming back, you know, if you want it this year. See if you did it, you know. I was like, cool, sit in the back and leave, you know. And but I would, like, come around, and I think I said, well, I'll have, like, I think I got a day clean for some reason. And, I got that chip, you know, and went back out. And then I got like a couple days clean for some reason. I went back out. And I guess just I thought, you know, I tried. And but like to me, I was too young. There's too many drugs yet to do. Too many parties to go to. And any day now, there's going to be this guy who's going to come up and take me away from all this. You know? But... yeah, I just kept coming back for some reason. I don't know. And one day, you know, I was thinking, yeah, if I got a guy in my life that was clean, he'd probably help me out a little bit by staying clean and check this out. And there was this guy in the rooms, and he had like 2 years clean. And he 13-stepped, you know what I'm saying? He's here tonight, so. And I liked it, you know, I liked it. I said, he was cool because everybody knew him. He was chair of this, and he was H and I that, and everybody liked him. And I said, if I would go with him, you know, it'd be like my social lubricant into the rooms, you know. And so I was like, I could not speak to you all, you know. I'd be standing by the coffee pot, you know, talking about that coffee's good, weather's fine. It wasn't about drugs and the Grateful Dead. I didn't know what to talk about, you know. I'm going to see you later. And you guys kept saying hang out with the winners, and I was a loser. And I was like, man. But this guy, you know, he liked me, so we started hanging out. And I went to all the meetings he did, and you know, he showed me around, he was teaching me some things, and I was grateful, man, because at that time, that was the only way he could get through to me. I had no women friends, and, I didn't go and talk to different people. It was like, I got a new guy, hang out with him. And when he's done, I hang out with this one, you know? And that's the way I was. And he was real cute there, so. I got, by going to meetings every night, and he got me involved with service work, and it started getting me introduced to a little bit. People were talking to me a little bit, and he got me into a state-run rehab of 30 days. And I went to that rehab, you know, and I prayed every night. I got on my knees, and I was in every meeting, raising my hand. I knew what the answer was and all this stuff. Memorized the literature. I was willing. Got out of there. Got involved with service. I think I had 2 home groups. I went to the coffee shops, hanging out. There was 3 women in the area at that time. I had every year clean. And I asked, you know, 2 of them to be my sponsor, and they shot me down. And so there was 1 left. And it's the badass biker chick. And I was like, they're thinking of the stuff they told me in rehab. Get somebody you can relate to. And I was like the happy hippie chick. And this is the badass biker chick. And she spoke, people listened, you know. And I said, well, I asked her to be my sponsor. She said, sure. And, you know, so I could say, here's my boyfriend. Ain't I cool? And here's my sponsor. Ain't I bad? You know? I cheered and I said, hi, sponsor. You know? And I go in the meeting and I say, I talked to my sponsor today. I really believed it. And that I was doing all right. You know, I went to meetings every night, all the service work. I went to the step meetings. I was hanging out with this guy that knew everybody. And, even when I was in the worst of my addiction, and I remained a straight-A student, so I felt like I was really smart and that I could teach these steps to myself. You know, by going to enough meetings and talking about them enough and reading them, that I would be fine. You know, you can do this thing and learn because I'm smart enough. If I just talk about it to people. And so I got like 4 months clean, and the Grateful Day came into town. When they left, I went with them. And I had some water. And I was like, see, that stuff didn't work. And it didn't work for me. It was nice. So I used. And if there's any other relapses in here, you know that once you've been in a place like this and you go back out, man, your high is never the same. Because it never goes away. It's like when I was in a meeting, somebody planted a seed, and with every token, every drink, man, that seed grew into this great big bush I couldn't get away from. I'd be using, thinking, man, I know I shouldn't be doing this. Oh, man, I see fellow relapsers at parties. I don't know you. Tell nobody where you see me because then they won't give me no more drugs. They'll know I have a problem. And it's bad. And then, like, things that you guys said to me would come back to me the weirdest times. And one of the things you guys said was that it's a progressive disease. It never gets better. It only gets worse. And the only ends for an addict is the jails, mental institutions, or you're going to die. And that stuff would come back to me when I kept crossing those lines, man. Those nevers and not yets. You know, when I first started and I was drinking and I was just smoking, you know, I'd be like, I ain't never doing nothing, sniffing nothing, man. Anybody who does that stuff is wasted and whack. I don't want to hang out with you. And you're not coming into my home. And the first time it was offered to me freely, I like it, you know. It's so weird. These are hallucinogens, man. You know, you could do 7 of them. You're legally insane. And I don't want you hanging around me. Like the first time I did it, drug of choice, you know. I was loving it. So you can imagine with a lot, you know, I'll never shoot, I'll never steal from my drugs. You know, I'll never drink and drive. I'll never hurt my family. You know, I'll never, you know. And the line just kept going on. And I knew that the only end for me was jails, institutions, and death when I was out there using. It says in our literature that sometimes a relapse can be the jarring experience that you need to fully apply yourself to this program. You know, but I was young and I was like, I differentiated myself out with you guys. And because I'd come to meetings and there'd be older people saying, damn, I've been using all I'll drink you on a table, you know. But anyway. Yeah, so that pissed me off. And, you know, I remember I used to use at the end of my addiction a lot in my room at my house by myself. And I used to watch this little black and white TV. I live out in a cornfield. We didn't have no cable. I'd sit in my room and I would use by myself and I would cry. And I didn't know why I was crying. And I would sit at this dresser and look in this mirror and look at myself. And I would cry. And if anybody walked in, you know, I ain't crying. No. Nothing's wrong. I'm happy hippie chick. Let's go on. But if you would walk by me while I was sitting there, you probably would have heard me saying, life sucks. You suck. You know, I don't want to be here. I hate you. And looking at myself in the mirror, you know. And I hated that room. But I, at the end, man, I didn't want to leave it. You know, even though I hated it, it was better than going out there and looking in the face of my family and them confused and baffled by me. And I was like, I don't know. If you love me, you wouldn't do this, Jennifer. I do love you, but I still do it, you know. And I couldn't explain why. And I just felt I wanted to die. You know, and I know lots of you all been there. And that's what makes us one of a kind. It's not what we used or how much or when. It's the feelings that makes an addict one of a kind. Earth people just don't understand. And that's the truth. And, you know, one night I was using by myself in my room. I was crying in bed, and I reached over, and there was basic text was on my nightstand from the times I went to the meetings before. And I opened it up. And I read Who is an Addict, and I read Step 1. And for the first time, I'd read that thing 100 times. And for the first time, I read the black part, the words. And see, all along, I was thinking, you guys are still talking about God. There's still that lightning rod that I need to get somewhere. You know, the lightning rod from God that when you go to church, it's the one that heals people and changes people. And I thought that's what's going on in these NA meetings. And I was trying to catch it and find it and look for it and try to be sincere and get it and beg for it. And I begged God for it. And, man, it never happened. And so that's what I thought y'all were about, was just that spiritual whatever it is, man. You guys are the special people, just like everywhere else, that gets clean somehow and changes their life. And it ain't never going to happen to me. But when I read the book, it says, when we are beaten, we become willing. I got the message through our basic text. Because it had no face, it had no age, it had no sex, it had no color. It didn't want nothing for me. It was just saying the truth of addiction. And that's what I needed. And I got the message. I read myself, my feelings, those feelings I never told anybody, the ones about confusion. There's a little paragraph in Step 1 in the basic text. It says, you know, we're powerless over having this disease, and the results of this disease are embarrassment, isolation, degradation, loss of control, distrust of others, guilt, embarrassment, you know. And all that shit was me. And I was like, man, it was saying, we're powerless over, we're self-centered, man, we're powerless, and this is the result of having this disease. And see, I thought these things were all that I ever was. Yeah, you know, it really is all I ever felt, and I didn't think anybody understood that. I didn't, and I, for the first time, I had hope that I could separate myself from these feelings that plagued me, you know, and learn to live a new way of life. I got scared because at that time I had found what I've been looking for all my life, you know. And I got real scared. At the end of that chapter, it says, you know, this can be frightening, but it is the foundation on which we build our new lives. I was like, damn, it knows when I'm scared, you know. So I went back to the meetings with a new attitude, man, and I listened and I heard and I listened to the people share for like the first time. I didn't care who was sleeping with who and who was wearing what and where we going Saturday night and all this stuff. I was listening because I was scared to use. And I heard other people who had seen death too and was scared to go back out and use. And those people, the same people, they called them winners because they were the ones doing all the shit, man. They were the ones doing the coffee and going doing the H&I. And they were the ones staying after the meeting, the same people who was talking about being scared to death to use again and dying. I went back to that biker chick and I fought, you know, took the risk, fought my fears, and asked her to be my sponsor. And I chased her down to work that step because I knew that I had done everything else that you guys told me to do. meetings every night, get involved with service, you know, pray, be willing, share, all that stuff. I never worked steps with nobody else but me. And that's the one thing this program is, man. And that's where the miracle lies. All this other stuff is pretty. Conventions are pretty. Meetings are nice. Cute people coming to the rooms. You know, but what is the miracle where this program is in those 12 steps, man. And without them, the change just ain't going to happen. I mean, yeah, I stayed clean a little bit. 4 months, I stayed clean. Smelled nice. Had money. People, you know, knew I was coming home at night, but inside I was the same. I really didn't think that could ever change those feelings. And that's the one only thing I needed to change was me. You know what I'm saying? So that's the one, there's the problem. You guys taught me that the drug use is just but a symptom and that the disease is a mental and spiritual illness, that the results are those feelings. I could still have a recovery. So anyway, work the steps, you know, that's the big thing. With somebody else, you know. No matter how smart you are, do that. You know, and I've been clean now for 8 years, over 8 years. And working the steps. You know, worked the 12 steps with that biker chick. And then worked up to 6 with another one. And now I'm back on 1 with another one, you know. And I sponsor other women. I've done H&I since I had 6 months clean. That guy that, you know, I met, he stayed in the rooms, you know. We stayed together. I got pregnant in my first year by him, and we got married after I had my first year, and, you know, we had, like, this happy NA family, you know. We went to the functions together, and he was Mr. Recovery, and I was his recoveryette, you know. Pulled me up on my shit. And this relationship was good for me at that time. I'd be crying in bed, feeling sorry for myself. And he would come in and say, "You're feeling sorry for yourself. Get grateful, girl." And I would, you know. And I learned a lot. I respected him a lot. And I had like 4 years clean. We're still living together, going through problems and changes and stuff. And, he'd stop going to meetings. And he had stopped going to meetings slowly over 2 years. He stopped going to meetings. But he was still spiritual. And he still stood up for the spiritual principles. And he said, you know, you learn to live a new way of life. You don't have to go back all the time. You take these principles in your affairs and you start to live them out in the real world. I got a life now. And I'd be like, cool, man. But I said, no, I still got to go to meetings, you know. And I'd be watching him saying, man, maybe I could do that too. You know, he's doing all right. Maybe when I get 7 years, you know, I can start living like him. And we were going to go out for my birthday. I think I was... turned 24 or something, 23, whatever. And came home, the house was dark, and I came in the house, and he was on the floor with a heroin overdose. And he's alive. But I never seen him even drunk before, and I thought he fell and hit his head. And I'm calling 911 and come on. Baby, don't move, baby, you hit your head. Don't move. Come on over, sit down. Shh, okay. And, the ambulance came and I'm freaking out, and you know, he wouldn't go in the ambulance, and I said, man, something ain't right here. And I went in the bathroom and there was a little blue bag on the sink, and I just walked out there. I said, man, this can't be. He has 7 years. This can't be. And at that moment, like that lady at that main speaker meeting this morning, at that moment my life changed dramatically. And he's been out there now for on and off for over 4 years. So I seen a man, he's helped me out. I see him close to death. Today he's clean, he's got like 2 months. And he's, you know, sitting in his room. And I just want to tell him that I love you and I want you to live. That's great, you know. And I separated from him, moved back with him, on and off and on and off. And I thought, you know, if I keep my meeting strong, I can help this guy out. Keep going, treatment, 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 12-step work and all this stuff. And I'm strong. I keep working my program, and I didn't use. But I can tell you that being around it, you know, I'd walk down into his room in his grandmother's house, and he'd have his baggies all out and crushed late. He's living in trash, and he's skinny, and he's almost dead. And I walk in, you know, and there's a bag on the table, and I just, my first instinct, man, what does it taste like? Just that close. And that's after 5 years, and that tells me I'm powerless. Still, if I go around the bars, if I go around the people who are using, it's only a matter of time, man, before I pick up and use. Because my disease is arrested, but I am still an addict. And it is more powerful than me alone. But see, when he went back out that time, he saved my life. Because I saw what happens when you don't go to meetings. When you stop going to meetings and you stop working a program, man, you use. You know, just for today, man, I'm clean. I might use tomorrow. There's no guarantee. No, but I'm just really glad that I'm alive, spiritually refreshed. I'm just so glad to be here and be able to share with you what I've been able to go through. And together we can do it. We can do it clean. You know, and learn to live a new way of life and live a life that's happy, not miserable. If you have a miserable life in recovery, let's talk about it. All right? Thanks for letting me share.
Someone come up and read just for today.
I'm Evan, I'm an addict. Just for today, tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new association, people who are not using and who are found in their life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
We have moment of silence for all the still suffering addicts in Addie's rooms. Special prayer for our friends, families, and loved ones. And help us keep our common cause staying clean.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back.
Someone lost the pocketbook, a black leather pocketbook in the black hole.